The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're at the last program of the week. Here, the last day of camp. Well, I guess we have Activity Sunday, too, but the last weekday of the PYC. We just started our All-Star festivities last night. Flag football, a close game right down to the wire between campers, and then the volleyball game last night inside the gymnasium. So lots of excitement, lots of noise and volume inside the John Amos Fieldhouse, which was pretty cool to participate in and to be a part of. Well, this week, I think we got things a little bit flip-flopped. It was me who was here on Wednesday. That was the night after, or the morning after, Boris Johnson was voted in. And then Richard filled in yesterday, which was the day after the Mueller hearing. We probably should have swapped our slots so that he could weigh in on Boris Johnson, although he did do quite a bit of that on yesterday's program. If you haven't heard that, you can reach the podcasts every day at the trumpet.com website. He got to it a day later, and I'll get to some of the Mueller proceedings, I guess, a little bit later as well. But so many important things happening in the world today. We're busy and preoccupied with camp, of course, but when you think about the new leadership in Great Britain promising basically to make Britain great again, and then this stronger alliance between the United States and Britain, also very significant considering what my father has been saying about the Jeroboam end. And then you look at everything that's being exposed. And this is, again, how many times has this happened when the latest trumpet comes out, the Trumpet magazine, I mean, can President Trump get control of his own divided government? That's in the August issue of the Trumpet magazine. Is he going to be able to get control? And the subhead says a biblical prophecy indicates yes. Yes, he is. And consider what's been happening then this week. We'll come to that, as I say, in just a second. My father wrote, now it seems that the harder the president's enemies work to destroy him, the more their own wicked ways are uncovered. The harder they work to destroy him, the more they attack him, the more their own wicked ways are uncovered. It says biblical prophecy indicates that there will be something of a turnaround, though, and that President Trump will actually gain more control of these government agencies that have been working to unseat him. You had all of these people, lots of commentators who were saying, well, you bring Bob Mueller before these committees and he testifies. Now, there's going to be questions coming from the Republicans, too. Don't forget. And they're going to have a lot of questions about how this investigation got off and running in the first place. But the Democrats, they pressed ahead anyway. They thought this was the surefire way to bring the Mueller report back into public awareness so that they can bring down this president. That's what they're, as I say, that's what they're obsessed with. We've referred to that Rush Limbaugh comment from, what was it, last September? This obsession that's gotten a hold of these people. This demonic possession, almost. And so they pressed forward. They had to put Mueller in front of these committees. It didn't work out so well. But going back to my father's article, here again, can President Trump get control of his own divided government? My father says Mr. Mueller is called Mr. Integrity. But is that true? This is the latest Trumpet magazine. He writes, these men are so self-righteous, they can't see any problems with themselves. Their reasoning is right out of the mind of the devil. It says last year, newly FBI released documents show that back in 2002, when he was FBI director, Mueller opposed pardons for four men whom the FBI had wrongfully imprisoned for decades. This is going back to 2002. Now, many people have made a lot out of the sort of the bumbling responses of Mr. Mueller on Wednesday. The fact that he's aging, he's not as sharp as he used to be, and so on. But let's go back to when he was younger. Let's go back 17 years. Four individuals, four men, the FBI had wrongfully imprisoned for decades. It says here, because he didn't want the Bureau's misconduct exposed. So he tried to block it. He was FBI director. He didn't want these men released. It says, for political purposes, he purposely let those innocent men rot in prison. Two of them died there. The other two exposed what happened and successfully sued the U.S. government for $102 million. Mr. Integrity? Really? This was the man presiding over the investigation into Donald Trump. Well, my father talks about William Barr, the new attorney general. He refers to that 19-page memo, June 8th, 2018, just a little over a year ago, and how that he felt that God's hand was in the production of that memo. It was William Barr who really exposed this demonic obsession behind the Mueller investigation. It was William Barr who exposed what Mueller and his team of angry Democrats were doing. My father says many Democrats thought Mueller would be able to prove absolutely that the president obstructed justice. That was Mueller's goal. But William Barr somehow understood that Mueller was, he somehow understood what Mueller was doing and produced this memo, a masterpiece of law-based reasoning that exposed and condemned everything they were doing. It says then Barr became attorney general and Mueller was made to look like a fool. Barr became attorney general and Mueller was made to look like a fool. That's in the latest Trumpet, an article that was produced many weeks ago. My father says between that memo and Barr's quick ascension to attorney general, the Mueller team had to change their strategy. Mueller's efforts were part of the deep state that flowed from President Obama's administration right into the Trump presidency. Those unelected lawyers think they know better than everyone. And then my father makes the point, and this is what we've been thinking about a lot this week. He says, I think God set them a trap. These are the Obama people. I think God set them a trap and then shredded the case for obstruction that Mueller was trying to prove. This is all part of God temporarily saving America. That's the point that my father makes. A trap that God set for them. And they walked right into it. Think about how quickly Mueller was confirmed by the Senate. And then he's now the attorney general. And this week we see the Democrats, we see the angry left, the radical left, once again walking right into a trap. It's interesting. Well, I know Bob Mueller's 74. William Barr's a little younger than that. But if you just compare their testimony, if you just consider William Barr, the few times he's gone before committees and such, and the way that he's answered questions, always, always, always by the book. Very sharp, very smart man. And then compare it to what happened on Wednesday. As I say, people are making a big to-do about the age. But I don't think it's so much the age as it is the lawlessness. When you're going on and on and on, lying and with this lopsidedly biased investigation, trampling on the Constitution, covering your tracks, it's only a matter of time before you're going to be exposed. And of course, when God's hand is in it, well, they just keep walking right into one trap after another. There's quite a few proverbs about snares. A fool's mouth is his destruction, and his lips are the snare of his soul. That's Proverbs 18:7. Proverbs 12:13 says, "The wicked is snared by the transgression of his lips." They're exposing themselves. And of course, as my father brings out here, you see God's hand in it as well. You see his hand in the memo from last year, the relatively easy confirmation of the new attorney general. This attorney general, by the way, he warned the Democrats. He warned Bob Mueller. He said, look, you don't have to do this. You don't have to testify. But he went ahead and did it anyway. The Democrats insisted. My father says, now they are being pursued by a man. This is the Democrats, the angry left. Now they're being pursued by a man who reveres the law and loves the Constitution. Listen to this statement. My father says, I believe we're going to start to get an even clearer view of the rot that was there, and it will be significantly cleaned up. We're going to get a clearer view of this rot, and it's going to be cleaned up to some degree. Now consider just how much of a disaster the Mueller testimony or the Mueller hearing was on Wednesday. It couldn't have gone worse for Mr. Mueller or for the Democrats in that chamber. But think about the last 2.5 years. As Julie Kelly wrote at American Greatness, for 2 years, Robert Mueller was the most powerful man in America. Think about that. For 2 years, this was the most powerful man in America. It says since May of 2017, he has ruled the media, the government, and the public discourse. Elusive by design. Mueller, along with his team of partisan prosecutors, operated in a rarefied sphere exempt from the normal political constraints of scrutiny and accountability. Nobody questioned him. For 2 years, keep in mind. She says Americans repeatedly were assured that Robert Mueller possessed superhuman faculties. His integrity is impeachable. His professional track record is flawless. Or so we are told. Or we were told this. It says a war hero and a former FBI director appointed by Republicans, don't you know? Robert Mueller was the man, the patriot, who would get to the bottom of how Donald Trump and his corrupt campaign associates colluded with the Russians to throw the 2016 election in Trump's favor. It says leaders on both sides of the aisle assured us that Mueller would act in a fair manner, that he would oversee every detail, and that any case against the president would be rock solid. Any tepid criticism of the special counsel was the equivalence of treachery, an attempt to subvert the law. Any Trump tweet aimed at the man in charge of a politically motivated investigation intended to take down his presidency was proof of Mr. Trump's criminality. It says, finally, for 2 years, Congress, mostly led by Republicans during that time, cowered in the powerful shadow of Robert Mueller. That's right. You had Republicans rising to his defense, telling the president, keep the investigation going. You have to. And so he did. For 2 years, this went on. She says governance ground to a halt as our country's legitimate challenges, including a porous southern border, were ignored. conservative commentators piled on, working with the left to attack anyone who dared to challenge Mueller's power. Americans repeatedly were wanted that the end is near. They were repeatedly warned that the end is near. The walls are closing in. Trump's days are numbered. As Mueller's team notched one indictment after another, although none was related to election collusion, Americans braced for the worst, or the best, depending upon one's political affiliation, as we became convinced Donald Trump would be hauled out of the Oval Office by the messianic Mueller. Well, that plan has gone up in smoke, or at least from as far as the Mueller investigation or report is concerned. They're not going to give up, of course. There's been quite a few reports saying there's no chance now for impeachment and such. And who knows how that sort of thing will play out. But we know enough about the radical left to know that they're not going to stop. But how revealing. You see this fictitious narrative, this superhuman persona that they gave to Bob Mueller for 2 years. And on Wednesday, it's exposed for the fraud that it was. Here's Representative Matt Gaetz, or Gates, I guess, grilling Mr. Mueller on Wednesday. This is the July 24th hearing, clip one.
Director Mueller, can you state with confidence that the Steele dossier was not part of Russia's disinformation campaign?
No, as I said in my opening statement, part of the building of the case was predated me, and by at least 10 months.
Yeah, I mean, Paul Manafort's alleged crimes regarding tax evasion predated you. You had no problem charging them. And matter of fact, this Steele dossier predated the Attorney General, and he didn't have any problem answering the question. When Senator Cornyn asked the Attorney General the exact question I asked you, Director, the Attorney General said, and I'm quoting, "No, I can't state that with confidence. And that's one of the areas I'm reviewing. I'm concerned about it, and I don't think it's entirely speculative." Now, if something is not entirely speculative, then it must have some factual basis, but you identify no factual basis regarding the dossier or the possibility that it was part of the Russia disinformation campaign. Now, Christopher Steele's reporting is referenced in your report. Steele reported to the FBI that senior Russian foreign ministry figures, along with other Russians, told him that there was, and I'm quoting from the Steele dossier, "extensive evidence of conspiracy between the Trump campaign team and the Kremlin." So here's my question. Did Russians really tell that to Christopher Steele, or did he just make it all up and was he lying to the FBI?
Let me back up a second, if I could, and say, as I said earlier, with regard to the Steele, that's beyond my purview.
No, it is exactly your purview, Director Mueller, and here's why. Only one of two things is possible, right? Either Steele made this whole thing up and there were never any Russians telling him of this vast criminal conspiracy that you didn't find, or Russians lied to Steele. Now, if Russians were lying to Steele to undermine our confidence in our duly elected president, that would seem to be precisely your purview, because you stated in your opening that the organizing principle was to fully and thoroughly investigate Russia's interference. But you weren't interested in whether or not Russians were interfering through Christopher Steele. And if Steele was lying, then you should have charged him with lying like you charged a variety of other people. But you say nothing about this in your report.
That's the exchange between Representative Gaetz and Bob Mueller on Wednesday about the Steele dossier, something that Director Mueller, he wouldn't even talk about it. And then with respect to Christopher Steele and whether or not he made the whole thing up or the Russians fed him misinformation, again, this is an investigation into Russian meddling. This is right at the heart, or it should have been, the aim of this investigation. So here's a congressman who's wanting to know about the origins, and yet you have the director, or the one who headed up this investigation, this special counsel, saying it's beyond his purview or that he doesn't know or he can't get into it. A lot of commentators, of course, made a big point about the directors not being aware of Fusion GPS, this group that was behind, again, the funding and such of the Steele dossier. This is Representative Chabot of Ohio in his exchange with Mr. Mueller. This is clip two.
Now, a few questions. On page 103 of volume two of your report, when discussing the June 2016 Trump Tower meeting, you reference, quote, the firm that produced Steele reporting, unquote. The name of that firm was Fusion GPS. Is that correct?
And you're on page 103?
103, that's correct, volume two. When you talk about the firm that produced the Steele reporting, the name of the firm that produced that was Fusion GPS. Is that correct?
Well, I'm not familiar with that.
It's not a trick question or anything. It was Fusion GPS. Now, Fusion GPS produced the opposition research document widely known as the Steele dossier, and the owner of Fusion GPA was someone named Glenn Simpson. Are you familiar with?
This is outside my purview.
So he's not familiar with Fusion GPS, and then he can't get into Glenn Simpson. That's outside his purview. Had no idea. This is the author, supposedly, of the, 480-page Mueller report? And, well, we now see that it wasn't him. He had a hard time even remembering what was in the report. And so, really, when you think about the angry, 17 angry Democrats, all of these Democrat donors, lawyers who represented Hillary Clinton, one lawyer who represented the guy who smashed the cell phones that had Hillary Clinton's information on it, another lawyer or attorney who was at the election night victory celebration for Hillary Clinton. Bob Mueller is the moderate. He's the token Republican. So if you take him out of the equation, if he's just a figurehead, what are you left with? You're left with the 17 angry Democrats headed up by Andrew Weissman. And there's others too, but who cares who was actually in charge? It wasn't Bob Mueller. That's the point. It was all of these Trump-hating attorneys. These never-Trumpers. These radical leftists who wanted to do anything and everything that they could. And still they do. This is their aim. They want to destroy the president. They want to destroy this presidency. Jim Jordan, just like some of these other congressmen, he wanted to go back to the beginning on how this all got started in the first place, this investigation, because we now know there was no Russian collusion. And so let's talk about the origins of all of this. How did it get started? How did it get off and running? Here's a part of that exchange, clip three.
Director, the FBI interviewed Joseph Mifsud on February 10th, 2017. In that interview, Mr. Mifsud lied. You point this out on page 193, volume one, Mifsud denied. Mifsud also falsely stated. In addition, Mifsud omitted. Three times he lied to the FBI, yet you didn't charge him with the crime.
Excuse me, did you say 193?
Volume 1, 193. He lied three times, you pointed out in the report. Why didn't you charge him with the crime?
I can't get into internal deliberations with regard to who would or would not be
charged. A lot of other people for making false statements. Let's remember this. In 2016, the FBI did something they probably haven't done before. They spied on two American citizens associated with a presidential campaign, George Papadopoulos and Carter Page. With Carter Page, they went to the FISA court. They used the now famous dossier as part of the reason they were able to get the warrant and spy on Carter Page for a better part of a year. With Mr. Papadopoulos, They didn't go to the court. They used human sources. All kinds of, from about the moment Papadopoulos joins the Trump campaign, you got all these people all around the world starting to swirl around him. Names like Halper, Downer, Mifsud, Thompson, meeting in Rome, London, all kinds of places. The FBI even sent a lady posing as somebody else, went by the name Asra Turk, even dispatched her to London to spy on Mr. Papadopoulos. In one of these meetings, Mr. Papadopoulos is talking to a foreign diplomat, and he tells the diplomat, Russians have dirt on Clinton. That diplomat then contacts the FBI, and the FBI opens an investigation based on that fact. You point this out on page one of the report. July 31st, 2016, they open the investigation based on that piece of information. Diplomat tells Papadopoulos, Russians have dirt, Papadopoulos tells the diplomat, Russians have dirt on Clinton. Diplomat tells the FBI. What I'm wondering is, who told Papadopoulos? How'd he find out?
I can't get into the evidentiary filing.
Yes, you can, because you wrote about it. You gave us the answer. Page 192 of the report, you tell us who told him. Joseph Mifsud. Joseph Mifsud's a guy who told Papadopoulos. The mysterious professor who lives in Rome and London, works at teaching two different universities. This is the guy who told Papadopoulos. He's the guy who starts it all. And when the FBI interviews him, he lies three times. And yet you don't charge him with a crime.
That's Jim Jordan getting to how this all got started in the first place. And it's all taken from the Mueller report. Papadopoulos, he said that Russians had dirt. That's what the FBI used as a pretext to start this whole investigation. And Papadopoulos got his information from Mifsud, as Jordan brought out there. And when the FBI then interviewed him later, he lied three times. And yet he wasn't charged with a crime. Think about all the other individuals related to Trump or on the other side politically who made a misstatement, who made the mistake of making one false statement in an FBI interview. And they're off to jail. Or they're in solitary confinement. But here's Mifsud. He can lie all that he wants, so long as it hurts Donald Trump. Here's Jim Jordan finishing off his questioning with Bob Mueller on Wednesday, clip four.
You charge Rick Gates for false statements. You charge Paul Manafort for false statements. You charge Michael Cohen with false statements. You charge Michael Flynn, a three-star general, with false statements. But the guy who puts the country through this whole saga, starts it all for 3 years we've lived this now, he lies, and you guys don't charge him. And I'm curious as to why.
Well, we can't get into it, and it's obvious, I think, that we can't get into charging decisions.
When the FBI interviewed him in February, FBI interviews him in February, when the special counsel's office interviewed Mifsud, did he lie to you guys, too?
Can't get into that.
Did you interview Mifsud?
Can't get into that.
Is Mifsud Western intelligence or Russian intelligence?
Can't get into that.
A lot of things you can't get into. What's interesting, you can charge 13 Russians no one's ever heard of, no one's ever seen, no one's ever going to hear of them, no one's ever going to see them. You can charge them. You can charge all kinds of people who are around the president with false statements. But the guy who launches the guy who puts this whole story in motion, you can't charge him. I think that's amazing.
I'm not certain I agree with your characterizations.
Well, I'm reading from your report. Mifsud told Papadopoulos. Papadopoulos tells the diplomat. The diplomat tells the FBI. The FBI opens the investigation July 31st, 2016. And here we are 3 years later, July of 2019. The country's been put through this. And the central figure who launches it all lies to us. And you guys don't hunt him down and interview him again. And you don't charge him with a crime. Now, here's the good news. Here's the good news. The president was falsely accused of conspiracy. The FBI does a 10-month investigation. And James Comey, when we deposed him a year ago, told us at that point they had nothing. You do a 22-month investigation. At the end of that 22 months, you find no conspiracy. And what's the Democrats want to do? They want to keep investigating. They want to keep going. Maybe a better course of action is to figure out how the false accusation started. Maybe it's to go back and actually figure out why Joseph Nipsen was lying to the FBI. And here's the good news. Here's the good news. That's exactly what Bill Barr's doing. And thank goodness for that. That's exactly what the Attorney General and John Durham are doing. They're going to find out why we went through this three-year saga and get to the bottom of it.
Time of the gentleman.
The last bit of Jim Jordan's exchange with Bob Mueller on Wednesday, mentioning the good news. Here's the good news. William Barr is going to get to the bottom of this. That's the new Attorney General. Once again, my father's article in the latest Trumpet magazine, the August issue, Can President Trump Get Control of His Own Divided Government? From that article, my father says, I think God set them a trap and then shredded the case for obstruction that Mueller was trying to prove. This is all part of God temporarily saving America by the hand of Jeroboam. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
A turning point in recent history has gone almost entirely overlooked. Since that time, an unseen cause has brought about national and world troubles in unprecedented fashion. Crises are intensifying as never before. In our generation, we are seeing radical changes to culture, family, education, religion, science, finance, politics, international relations. Everything has been affected. You cannot understand events without recognizing this unseen cause. The United States has been shaken in astonishing fashion. Have you wondered why the world's number one superpower is declining so rapidly? Are you concerned about where the current administration is leading this country? The Bible provides penetrating insight into the invisible cause of society's decline. America is prophesied to fall before it rises again. The Bible also gives extraordinary insight into how that fall will come about. This insight puts the seriousness and urgency of current events in their true perspective. Understand what's in store for America and why. Visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request this free, enlightening booklet, America Under Attack.
The Trumpet Daily.
Mueller has launched the opening salvo in what's going to be a long but very successful war.
Mueller is going to win.
Robert Mueller poses an existential threat to the Trump presidency.
Someone walked in my office and said I was a subject of a multi-year criminal investigation led by former FBI Director Robert Mueller. I'd wet my pants.
That if Mueller does his job, if he's able to connect the dots, if he's able to show collusion, then we've got him.
With Robert Mueller closing in, Trump has destroyed his own presidency, and he is showing us his soul a little more every day. Or rather, some would say his lack of one.
Well, I have utmost faith and confidence in Bob Mueller.
Robert Mueller is getting closer.
Mueller is closing in.
Mueller really is sort of closing the pincers and ready to bring this to a close.
He is going to persist, and he is going to find things.
Trump clearly feels that pressure, like it's pincers closing in on him from all directions.
Mueller reminds me of the starfish, which gets itself tightly around the clam and uses all its stuff to weaken and pry open the clam. Now, this is a battle to the death, as far as the clam is concerned. If the starfish is able to open him even a little bit, he can get him open all the way, and that's it, of course, for the clam. He's the starfish's lunch.
That's it for the clam, says Chris Matthews. This was at the height of the two-year investigation when, as I read to you in the first segment, Bob Mueller could do no wrong. He was not to be questioned. He was not to be criticized. He's a man of integrity. He's closing in with the pincers on Donald Trump. And then, and this gives you some insight, too, in just how the Democrats operate. It doesn't go so well for them on Wednesday. And I mean, they throw him under the bus. They have no more need for him. They do not care about him now. They'll move on and they'll find some other narrative. But look at how quickly they turned on him. Here's another montage from the media, your friends in the media, in response to the hearing on Wednesday. Clip five.
As they were using him for clarity, he'd somehow fog it up.
But he directly...
And how he would do certain things. And so, look, on optics, this was a disaster.
Was the ball advanced?
No. Impeachment's over.
Today, he was a witness. And he, frankly, wasn't a really good witness. Because he declined to answer, by my count, over 100 times.
Bob Mueller's grasp and presentation of the underlying facts was not very detailed.
The shortcoming is in appearing to not know basic fact pattern.
I thought he was boring. I thought in some cases he was sort of evasive. I thought it really was a very ineffective defense of his own work.
Look, from the Democratic perspective, to me so far, it's been a bit of a bust.
A lot of Democrats in particular used the D word and branded this a disaster early on.
It was a bust. It was a disaster. He couldn't answer 100 times, I think, one of the ladies said in that montage. Even James Clapper yesterday on one of the cable shows, he talked about the testimony, tried to defend him to some degree, but then gave a pretty revealing fact at the end of his comment as well. Clip seven.
Point.
I want to talk about Robert Mueller's testimony on the Hill yesterday, the former special counsel. You know him. You've worked professionally with him in past years, right? Very often. He did not have the command of the contents of the report that I think universally people were expecting him to have. What did you make of that?
Well, Brianna, somebody who's just south of 80 years old myself and I'm a little older than Bob Mueller, actually, and also someone who, like him, doesn't like to testify. So I'm a little reluctant to be critical. I think he's operating under tremendous pressure. I think his role as the special prosecutor was more of a CEO, where he oversaw the operations but did not engage directly in, say, interrogating witnesses or actually writing the report.
He didn't engage directly with the witnesses, didn't write the report, just kind of oversaw it, I guess. But this only adds fuel to the fiery tweets that the president's been sending out for 2 years, that this is being run by 17 angry Democrats. It's not a moderate Republican at the helm. He didn't even write the report. Why didn't we learn this earlier? If the media, if they were doing their job, why wasn't this brought out earlier? That in fact, he's not involved in the details. Andy McCarthy, he made this point on one of the Fox programs just yesterday, clip eight.
And I think this is the big takeaway from the hearing. It's inconceivable that Robert Mueller ran this investigation. I think one thing that was evident yesterday in 7 hours of testimony is he only has a remote familiarity with his own report and with the investigation. He was clearly staff-driven, and that's actually what the president's been saying all along.
It's actually what President Trump was saying all along. So here again, you go back to this article from the latest Trumpet magazine. Now it seems that the harder the president's enemies work to destroy him, the more their own wicked ways are uncovered. You get to the end of the hearing on Wednesday, and it's obvious. It's inconceivable that Robert Mueller ran the investigation. It's inconceivable. This was staff-driven, as McCarthy says. Driven by the 17 angry Democrats. And who are these individuals? Well, the Federalist, if I can get to the quote. It says here on July 24th, 2019, that's just the other day, Democrats staged vivid and irrefutable proof that the appointment of Robert Mueller came to violate these principles. Well, I'm picking it up in the middle of the thought. Let me just get down a little bit further where he talks about some of the people involved in this investigation. How long has it been like this with Mueller not really engaged? That's the point of this question, or rather the article at the Federalist. Mueller can't keep his story straight about whether he would have indicted the president but for the Justice Department policy prohibiting the indictment of a sitting president. He didn't even know that one of his top attorneys who headed up the Papadopoulos investigation, Jeannie Rae, actually represented Hillary Clinton in litigation over emails. So I'll ask this again. How long has it been like this? The investigation went on for 22 months. How long has it been like this? It says, with the benefit of hindsight, we can conclude that Mueller knows so little about his own report that he must not have been engaged in the oversight of the investigation. Not only did the probe fail to proceed expeditiously, it frequently violated rules intended to curb prosecutorial abuse. If, as is now apparent, the leadership of the probe fell to the next tier of the appointed attorneys, this would mean Andrew Weissman, the reputed top lieutenant of Mueller, Aaron Zebley, Mueller's former chief of staff who sat with Mueller as he testified in the July 24 hearing, and perhaps Jeannie Rae, who headed up the Papadopoulos prosecution. Weissman worked for the government at the time of the appointment of Mueller and should have been prohibited from assuming de facto control of the probe for his lack of independence and political bias. Mueller, Rae, and Zebley all came from Wimmerhale, a law firm that represented Clinton's interests in lawsuits related to Clinton's email troubles. It says both Rae and Zebley personally and actively represented Clinton's interests shortly before joining the special counsel's office. They should have had nothing to do with the special counsel investigation or investigating Clinton's political opponent, let alone taking on a leadership role. This journalist at the Federalist says nobody should rejoice in the humiliation of an elderly man, but history owes a debt to the revelation of the probe's original sin, the appointment of an unqualified leader who led a band of Trump-hating partisans run amok. That's at the Federalist. That's what you're left with. You remove the token Republican, the lone so-called moderate, and what you're left with is 17 angry left-wing Democrat Trump-hating attorneys doing anything and everything that they can to bring down a sitting president of the United States. President Trump was on Sean Hannity's program last night, and here's some of what he had to say, clip 9.
You know, I think there's a whole new day starting. I think, you know, I used to use, and I still use, drain the swamp. We have some very, very bad people in government that would be willing to do very bad things and for bad reasons.
That's President Trump on Fox News last night, saying that there's a lot of bad people in government. He's working to drain the swamp, but he sees this as a new day starting. I'll refer you again to my father's article, Can President Trump Get Control of His Own Divided Government? A Biblical Prophecy Indicates. Yes, yes, that's in August 2019, Trumpet Magazine. One final clip from Donald Trump, President Trump, last night on Fox, clip 10.
Because this should never happen to another president of the United States again. This is a absolute catastrophe for our country. This was a fake witch hunt, and it should never be allowed to happen to another president again. This was treason. This was high crimes. This was everything as bad a definition as you want to come up with. This should never be allowed to happen to our country again.
treason, it says, or he said. High crimes. My father in the article, can President Trump get control of his own divided government? He said it was treason of the highest kind. Of course, when he says those kinds of statements, the president, I mean, the reaction is predictable coming from the media. They just think it's so unhinged. They think it's so over the top. But like I've pointed out here before, you can accuse the president of treason. That's fine. You can say, by the way, you can say President Trump is old and senile. Isn't it amazing, though, how the tables are turning, just like my father says? God's setting a trap. And every time they think they're finally going to get the upper hand, they're finally going to bring him down, they're finally going to destroy this president, well, he fights back, and they are exposed. The next step, we'll see. Who knows what they'll do next? They're obsessed, though. There's this demonic possession. And so they'll move on. They'll dust off after this. All the things that they said about Bob Mueller, he can't do anything wrong. And then they just drop him like a bad habit yesterday or Wednesday. And so they'll move on and create the next false narrative in the hope that they can finally, finally destroy this president. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with a few emails that have come in over the last several days. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.
To America's founding fathers, character meant everything to the success of the nation and its leadership. The Constitution was based upon the fundamental principles of religion and morality. These were the primary building blocks of the American nation. George Washington said, "The foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality." Character was no minor issue to America's first president. He regarded it as the basis of national policy. Where did the founding fathers develop these ideas? Many of these principles stemmed from the Holy Scriptures. The Bible provided early Americans with the instruction and guidance of how to properly govern one's life. These beliefs helped build a nation of strong families and upright leaders. Today, America has dismissed the Bible as the foundation of developing righteous character. Men now leave it to themselves to determine right from wrong. Where has the rejection of biblically based principles led this nation? There is a cause for these effects. To understand the course of events that have led this nation to its current state, visit thetrumpet.com and click on the Literature tab to request our free booklet, Character in Crisis.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
A few emails from the last few days. One here says, "I was listening to your program on how Germans are rewriting history to make it look as if it's only Hitler and his inner circle that were guilty of the crimes committed in the Second World War and the Holocaust. That really made an impact on me. As a student of modern German history myself, something else that people get wrong is the role of Franz von Papen played in all of this. It says a lot of people paint him as a reluctant pragmatist who originally tried to restrain Hitler and then kept his head low to survive all the chaos of the late 1930s and 40s. In other words, a Democrat with a good heart deep down." They say similar things about Paul von Hindenburg. That's in response to a program we had last week. This one here, following up again on the campaigns, we've got another one, by the way, coming up, not this weekend, but next, Toronto and then Raleigh, North Carolina. But this here says, "Thank you. You will be seeing me and another in Toronto, August 4th. We're looking forward to hearing you speak. My dad was a PCG Bible study graduate, but never had a chance to be baptized properly or by a PCG minister. My dad was faithful in his reading and had 40-plus books from Mr. Armstrong and your father, not to mention years of the Trumpet and Royal Vision magazines. He tried to make me interested in the PCG many times. However, although I have always believed our Father exists, God was not calling me then. 3.5 years after my dad died in 2015, my husband and I finally picked up the books. We've been faithfully doing our Herbert W. Armstrong Bible study course, and we're doing well. We've met with PCG ministers. They had made a house call to us a few months ago, and we keep in touch on a regular basis. It says, we truly believe God is ready for us, and I am ready as well. It says, we've been repenting, honoring God on the Sabbath, and so on. So that's some good feedback from one of our readers, co-workers, and hopefully one of our members, soon to be. Another one here says, absolutely fantastic. It was a wonderful pack. I was very happy to see those from last year. This is someone who saw some of the same individuals at the pack previously. I think this is in response to the LA pack. It says, praying that they're snatched out of the fire quickly. Another one here says, is there plans to have a pack in San Antonio? I'd love to attend. I read the Trumpet Daily or the Trumpet Brief every day and share it with family and friends. That's one asking about San Antonio. Another one asked about Greensboro, North Carolina. Well, hopefully that individual can make it down or up. I'm not looking at a map. To Raleigh. Another email here from Canada says, it was wonderful to see you and your wife in Red Deer, and even more wonderful to hear the statistics of the number of non-member attendees at all the PACs so far. From Ontario, the campaign in LA, it says, it was good to meet you after listening to you hundreds of times. I hadn't been around church people for over 25 years. Well, I've been around my father-in-law every once in a while, but he finally embraced Tkachism. I never did. I was out in the wilderness, I guess, but God came out and rounded me up. It felt like a homecoming to be around others again who have ears to hear and eyes to see. I don't know why God called me back, but I can't wait to find out. It says, thanks again. I hope your dad is feeling better. Kudos to you and all the wonderful presenters. It says, oh, and regarding Mr. Davis, it was great to put a face with the voice. He says, I thought he'd be more of a burly Texas cattle rancher. So there you go. Hopefully Mr. Davis is out there listening. But he was with us on all of those campaigns out west. I think he might even still be traveling with the follow-up Bible studies and such. Well, that's all that we have time for today. We thank you for joining us on today's program. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next week.